Hey, Dr. Drew here, and this is just a reminder that the discussions here are not a substitute for medical care or medical evaluation. This is purely for entertainment and education. We hope you learn something, but see your doctor, get proper medical care. Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
First of all, Bob's going to do the magic intro.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, get your iPhone plugged into the power source so that you can watch this on Facebook Live. And welcome us and Shelly to Dave Navarro.
Hey.
He needs a microphone, but he's here.
He's here. There
nothing.
He is.
I got nothing.
There we are.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Happy to be here.
Couple intros. Phone number, if you want, we're going to take your calls at 323-649-8268. Those of you out there on Facebook, 323-649-8268. Tell your friends. We're taking calls. Dave will talk to you. Shelly will talk to you. Why am I hearing feed? Oh, that's
it's my own phone, and I'm watching us. We're so good. I can't not watch us. Okay.
I understand. So, Dave, I also want to, before we even get started here, I want to point out that Dave has an amazing event coming up on April 16th. You want to talk about it? You want me to talk?
You
want to
do a lead-in?
Because
it sounds more pro coming from you, and then I'll be like, yeah, it's going to be great.
And then I'll do a brag-in.
Okay, Billy Morrison.
And then I'll follow up with the brag-in.
Billy Morrison, Billy Idol, Courtney Love, Corey Taylor, Jesse Hughes, all for a mental health charity concert. The event will take place April 16th. In Los Angeles at the Belasco Theater.
That's right. Yeah. Beautiful
and
place.
I will be there. Bob, Shelly, please be there.
You guys got to come.
Oh, 100%.
And it's funny that Dave came up with this right now because you and I have been sort of tilting in this direction, which is that the mental health piece is sort of getting overlooked.
We have to get out there.
Yeah.
We have to get out there because we cannot afford any more nonsense on any level. We can't afford it.
We have to do it now. I feel like I'm sick of this.
Right now.
Dave is smirking, but
no, I was thinking I need to hire Shelly as our spokesperson.
I absolutely can't take any
I'm
more
really impressed.
Nonsense. I can't take it. I cannot have
it. It's the homeless population.
Don't bring up the homeless.
Because then my head will explode. But the point is, all of it's all symptoms of what she's talking about.
Exactly.
And I have had
including
it.
Florida.
We have
including
to stop
Florida.
It.
What, the state of Florida?
No, the school shooting.
Oh, the school shooting. I beg your
Jesus,
pardon.
Jesus, what planet are you on?
Was that including Florida?
we have to do
that. That kid was crying out for help, and the community was saying, this kid needs help.
There were tons of 911 calls.
And 39.
39 calls.
He was deemed low risk. not in my facility.
40, they take a notice.
He would have not been deemed low risk in my facility or by me.
However, you two, you know, working clinically as we have for many, many years, know that there's this zone, much like when cops go, well, I can't do anything until he actually hits you or he actually shoots at you. Mental health has a similar zone.
100%.
If you're not saying, I'm going to kill myself, I'm going to kill somebody else, I can't feed myself, we can't do a lot. We have to mandate care to people that don't want care. And that, to me, is a major, major problem.
Hmm? Major problem. We have to change. We cannot continue to go on the way that we're going on. Mm. We have to have change. We have to have change on every level. We need all involved to have change. We have to come up with ways and means to help people,
but
to not demonize them
for
being ill.
Of course, and we're talking about mental health, and obviously mental illness falls under that category.
Yes.
And what falls in that category? But I'm also trying to be a proponent of mental health
globally,
even for people who aren't ill.
Absolutely.
A connectedness, more of a spiritual basis of life.
Yeah, now that I want to get into.
We can touch
compassion.
Upon compassion,
absolutely.
Love, forgiveness, these kinds of things.
Forgiveness does not exist in the United States of America anymore.
Oh,
that's a word that you don't hear very much.
You don't hear it very much, but you hear it.
But I mean,
even
self-care falls into the category for
people
me.
People laugh at self-care.
I know,
they make
but
fun
I mean,
of
at
it.
This point,
I talk about it all day long.
They don't listen.
Okay,
you know
but
that.
Maybe they don't listen, but I'm going to keep saying it.
So I mean,
but let me do the bragging about Dave.
Right.
They're daring to do something that's almost impossible. To do the Velvet Underground, you know, many people have done Velvet Underground. Yes. But to do Adam and the Ants, Kings of the Wild Frontier, is impossible as a musician. That's why I'm going.
It's impossible.
Because I want to see you do it.
It's the effort where we got two. Okay, first of all, I put it this way. Kings of the Wild Frontier, both these albums were huge albums. Kings of the Wild Frontier and Velvet Underground with Nico. Huge albums that kind of formed who I became as a musician.
Myself
in
as well.
In a lot of ways.
Me too.
And Adam and the Ants was the first record that was kind of in the new wave genre that got me out of hard rock and into like more current music at the time because it was so guitar heavy and because of the tribal drumming.
Marco's
unbelievable. And so then there was so much tribal drumming, which in turn influenced Stephen Perkins from Jane's Addiction, which led to a massive component to the Jane's Addiction sound that a lot of people don't really know. Hmm. So when Bob's talking about doing that record,
it's really hard.
You need two drummers. You need a lot of vocals because you got all the overdubs on the vocals and we're covering all that stuff.
Live.
Mm-hmm. Live.
Yeah.
And then we're going to and then we're going to close the curtains and then we're going to come back and do Velvet Underground with Nico, which is essentially a completely different set production wise and it's going to have to be different instrumentation and amps because
completely different
one
sound.
The record was recorded, you know, 20 years prior to the other one. So we're trying to tackle both records, but the initial idea came about obviously because we've lost a lot of friends over the years. And I personally struggle with depression. I have a lot of friends who do struggle with depression. And me and Billy were having a conversation, and we were talking about those things. And in the same breath, we started talking about how much we appreciated the full album experience, where you didn't have the opportunity to skip the song that you didn't want to hear.
That you weren't ready for yet.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Well, now people
those two albums, neither one of them have a hit, but the whole albums are masterpieces.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so the experiential process of listening to the album, getting up, turning over the side, listening to the other side, we just missed that. You know, there was more of a physical, visceral connection with music back in those days. Mm-hmm. And so
I remember trying to drop the needle on the right song.
Oh yeah, I still fucking her. But so we kind of just forged this idea, like, well, let's try and do these records.
When you first thought about Adam and the Ants, did you think, nah, that's too hard? You didn't think that?
We didn't think that until we started learning. And then we just shoved on through, and now I know every single note on that thing.
Because, you know, Thelonious will try anything. We tried amp music one time, and wouldn't try to perform it in front of people. It's so hard.
It's really hard, and it's really specific, and it's really ahead of its time. And I know it created a huge counterculture genre movement at the time, but I think it has since been overlooked.
Well, I always say Adam in the Ants brought sexy back, just like Justin Timberlake claimed to many decades later.
Who?
It was because punk rock wasn't very sexy. You had the Clash, the Jam, Sex Pistols, not a lot of sex appeal in there. All of a sudden, came along.
I do a radio show next to Jonesy every day.
And not a lot of sex appeal. But you know what I mean? It was like sex was back in punk rock. Adam and the Ants.
Yeah, so he invented this whole culture of this like swashbuckling, like,
very pirate-esque.
Pirate charming.
That's
caricature.
What I remember, the pirate.
Yeah, pirates.
Yes. But and then to do the Velvet Underground record, which, you know, was a massive soundtrack to my drug use and also an influence to me musically. So if I was either getting high listening to it, or I was trying to emulate it as a musician.
Mm-hmm. Let's debrief about that record for a second.
Sure.
You know, I started listening to it when I was like 13. I don't know about Shelley, but I didn't really
18.
Know. I wanted to know what some of the lines are about, like up to Lexington, 125. did you really didn't know what it meant when you were listening to it?
No,
but
I didn't
I
know.
Found myself on Lexington with this guy following him to go get drugs, and I was like, oh my God. I was like 23. I was like, this is it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I always thought that Nico was just the most amazing person, and that record, I still put that record on, and I still have an effective sort of romance with that record because it is so beautiful. The sound of that record is so beautiful. You could put on any note and I can pull that memory right out of there. It just has so much feel to it. And it's so beautiful. And I loved how she sang. And, you know, I never was a singer, but I really loved the way that
she sang. You sang with Keith Richards. How are you not a singer?
What?
Well,
she sang with Keith Richards.
But I'm not a singer, okay? I'm not a singer, Bob, okay?
Well, neither is he. But...
That's what I'm saying. Right, right. I mean, I don't... I
is,
can,
is there a
I
story there
we
need to hear?
It's a huge story. Like,
yeah, well, we need to hear this.
Okay, so there was, you know... There was this big benefit
thing,
and,
right,
and
right?
big Graham Parsons thing. But I didn't sing with him, like, on the mic. It was just all of us, you know, singing.
You were singing Wild Horses.
Yeah, singing Wild Horses.
She sang Wild Horses with
me. It wasn't, like, me and Keith, was, like, hey.
It was Shelley's We Are the World moment.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Fantastic.
Oh, my God. Speaking of that was, like, one of the best moments ever.
Speaking of that Velvet record and Nico, the voice of Nico, in the 1991 Lollapalooza, when we were touring with Susie and the Banshees, mm-hmm. I used to go out and join them and play All Tomorrow's Parties.
Oh, my God.
With Susie Sue singing it. You should YouTube that one day. And that I got chills now thinking about it.
Yeah.
Anyway. Number again, right, everybody, if you're listening, you're watching, 323-649-8268. We're screening your calls right now. Can we just stop and take a beat?
We could just nerd out on music
all
day.
There was hidden in all that nerding was an amazing addiction story that everyone missed because you guys take it so for granted. Where the drug addict is so excited because a lyric and a song is coming true while he's going to shoot heroin.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I'm living it.
It's surprise.
But when you've sung along with a record about something you really don't understand and then you realize what it is, it's a profound moment.
And then you understand it.
I want you to understand. The non-addict would go, oh, man, I'm going to shoot drugs, and that's what it meant. Instead of, holy crap,
there was a time, you know, because I knew the song Heroin before I had done heroin.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
So there was a time when I finally heard the song Heroin after having done it.
Or on
and
it.
On it. And I got it.
Yeah, bingo.
I got it.
Yeah, Yahtzee.
I've ended up here. It's like, I've ended up here.
Well, yeah, it's almost like, you know, receiving some kind of...
It's such a drug addict thing.
Some kind of...
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
it is.
So good. It's too good.
It's always like some kind of sacrament.
Well, that's interesting. Sacralizing all that.
Yeah.
That, it's true. There's a whole ritual and sacred quality
exactly.
to people
doing
those.
No, I got a thing about that. About drug addiction. People need sacrament. They need ritual.
Yeah.
And we had rejected religion as just en masse, the punk rock generation, right?
Across the board.
Across the board. And so drugs became like over at your singer's house, it was very ritualistic.
Yeah, which
it
singer?
It was like religion.
Actually, either one, probably.
There you go.
So tell them the details. Where do they go?
Tickets are available.
Now,
no, I don't know. But
well,
tickets,
I hope I still get tickets.
I can hook you up.
Can you?
I know somebody.
You can sing in the We Are the World moment.
Yes.
You can go to livenation.com. You can go to ticketmaster.com. It's called Above Ground, and the proceeds go to Music Cares. Which are putting, you know, doing a lot of work with the mental
health. They're branching
out
into mental health now, Drew. You know that.
And I have some resources for mental health treatment.
You do?
I do.
You're going to share them with us?
Yes. Yes, I will.
Okay,
let's take a call first. I got a call in here, and let's see what this is. It doesn't seem to be... Hi there.
No, that's the screener.
Oh, that's the screener? Okay.
Well, we can talk to her. what question does she have for Dave?
Return to screening. 800. Oh, the number again here with
it's
us.
It's not an 800 number. It's a
323-649-8268. But let's talk about the sort of the spiritual bankruptcy that we sort of see in this country, and we're sort of starting to connect the dots between the opiate addiction, the shootings, the homelessness. It's all sort of coming under the same umbrella. If you
that
really think about it,
chronic emptiness that I talk about, the chronic emptiness that needs fulfillment, and how do we do that?
But there are symptoms that are beyond me, which is, that I and my friends have been talking about 3 years, and you brought it up, forgiveness.
Mm.
Democracies are based on compromise and kind of forgiveness,
sure,
and let's
sure,
move
sure.
forward. And now we are a society that does not forgive.
But what you're saying, though, is it require a common something. idea, rallying cry, something.
I thought it was America and democracy, Drew, but apparently that's up for debate.
No, it was a random idea. It was an idea. An idea of equality and the Bill of Rights. And these were ideas, the whole thing. And we were all bound together. By now, no one even knows what those are. They don't study them. They don't have a civics class. They don't even understand why we're all together on one continent. It's an idea. We're the only country founded on an idea. Do you know that?
Well,
all other countries are founded on a history, an ethnicity, a war, a something. A bunch of guys got together and said, we have an idea.
Right, right.
Idea of how to form a government, and let's get these ideas
together. Based a lot about slavery, how to have a union where half of the population.
No. Now you're going off. They got their ideas actualized by making a contract with the devil, by doing a horrible compromise that they should have dealt with in the beginning, and they didn't, and then there's a war over it later. They compromised. And that was Hamilton. Hamilton was so hell-bent on getting everything passed that he just said, all right, we'll figure it out. Let's just figure it out.
What do you think the predominant issue is that is keeping America sick?
I have this feeling. Help me flush this out.
Sure.
I feel like something happened in the 60s and 70s that we've just not recovered from. Mm-hmm. And I think it affected our families. It affected our spiritual landscape somehow. I'm not even sure what I mean by that necessarily, because I'm sort of weak on that topic. But okay. I feel the emptiness and the lack of something. Something's missing. And I think we dug deep into narcissism and explored the limits of freedom with a narcissistic intent.
And perhaps a familial, national, parasympathetic nervous system damage.
Yes.
In a PTSD kind of way.
I don't know that we can sell that to people, but I know exactly what you're talking about. I don't disagree. Okay. I don't disagree at all, in fact.
I'm just thinking. I'm not even selling it.
You want to sell it?
Yeah.
Something's wrong with our hearts.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because I feel it.
And the solar plexus.
Yeah. Yes.
100%.
Yes. And that's that region that the parasympathetic nervous system delivers information from the body, and the body is injured and dysregulated, and we can't get it together. We can't. And so we start looking for ways to avoid the emptiness and the dysregulation.
And then actually taking what is chronically upsetting within self and then projecting it onto others.
I've been dealing with that more lately. I got to say, I've been thinking about that more lately. Explain what
the
you mean by that.
Projection. Yeah. I feel that a lot of this is our global projection.
Let me define what this is. When you're primitive and narcissistic and can't manage your own feelings, you tend to project them out into the world by various ways. One of the very primitive ways is the way borderlines do it. They project it into you.
Into somebody else.
Into your body. So when you're around people and you feel that, what the hell? I'm upset. Why am I upset? Well, that's his or her feelings that you're getting.
Coming into you.
Interpersonally, Dave, and you'll get it.
But I do understand that, and I do know when I'm inherently feeling less safe.
But you want to rescue those people and calm them down and serve them,
No, that's
right?
me. That's me.
That's me.
You do. Yeah.
I want to. I'm talking about when projections are happening to me, I can pick up on them and feel.
And what
less
do you
safe.
Do? What is it? What does it inspire you to do? Flee or
yes.
deal with? Flee.
Well, but usually flee.
That's not uncommon. That's a sort of a common thing.
That's it's like a different, protective
it's different,
nature.
Yeah, because it's different if it's a situation where I know what the specific cause or the root of an issue, and I can be of service in that area. But if it's just in a random public setting.
No, and I'm talking real intimate but friends, right?
That oh, yeah, no. No, then I want to be, I want to
fix.
I want to help.
And then,
guide, because there's a certain point where, first of all, you know better. You can't fix.
Right.
And in a second,
you can try like hell.
Yeah, you know, and if someone doesn't want to help themselves, I certainly can't help them.
Right.
So there's a limit on that. That is, I have a boundary that's very strong about how far I'm willing to go when it comes to that.
When I was I used to explain to people that fleeing feeling, I would say, when I was early in my career, I used to imagine like a cartoon where a cartoon they go through the wall and there's like a cutout of the person running out of the room.
Oh,
that was what I in my head imagined.
That's what I look like half the time.
That's how I feel at Starbucks.
Well, you sound so healthy, Dave. Sound so healthy.
Really working
love
on
it.
Sounding that way.
You sound really healthy.
I've learned a lot of words.
I mean, I haven't seen you in a while, but you look so healthy and you sound so healthy. I'm so happy
I would like to invite you to join this space and manifest some new experience with me.
Okay.
That's all you got to say, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
But, But in terms of manifesting,
I'll work on that.
Does this involve meditation and yoga?
Yes.
And drops? Yes. Are there drops involved in this?
Drops? What do you, I don't know.
Then the water that'll make you healthier, whatever it is.
I don't know what those are.
Oh. Leave Dave alone. we're all in agreement what the sort of the nature of the problem is.
Not hallucinogenic drops, those healthy drops like that everybody we know does.
Bob projects a lot, doesn't he?
The droppers that go into the tongue.
Yes, I have. You've always been cynical.
Dave's always been cynical like me about that stuff.
Well, it's the same thing as the guy who goes, "All right, now let me move your arm," and then he does something, and he goes, now I'm really moving.
Like, I did that.
Yeah, the guy pushes harder is what happens.
Yeah. I thought so, maybe.
I think he does.
But you know what? I got
Drew
a lot of
knows
calcium
none
out
of this.
I've seen...
are these people, these parasitic spiritual nutritionists that feed on rock and roll people, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And they have you hold,
hold sugar,
and try to push your arm down,
right?
For me, it was calcium. Okay, I don't know who they're going to, but it was calcium for me, magnesium. I was dangerously low on those types of minerals.
All I ask everybody, but this is more.
You can get blood work to figure that out.
I didn't need any sugar, trust me.
Okay, two things. Our viewers are complaining about us jumping on each other, so we got to watch that. Secondly.
One person complained.
Secondly. Oh, we saw her now. Secondly, I've heard all that, seen all that, and what I ask everyone to please do.
Yes.
Just ask whomever is advising you to simply sketch out the stoichiometry, the chemistry that they're suggesting. Just sketch it out. Just the basic chemistry. Not the advanced mechanisms whereby the repair occurs. Just the basic chemistry you're proposing.
That's going to weed out 98.8%.
100%.
100%.
And then I will ask them about the thermodynamics. I will ask them about that. So.
But, Bob, I will answer your question that I have since we used to hang out, I have had a bit more Kool-Aid than you would think.
Okay.
I'm still cynical, but I'm a little bit deeper.
No, I can feel it, I know your backstory, when you come from trauma, whatever coping mechanism you used, and Dave, I always say, is the funniest guy I've ever known, right? So that's a defense mechanism. He's always making jokes. Mm-hmm. You're always deflecting away, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of times what I love about you is self-effacing comedy.
Yeah.
Right? You wouldn't expect from someone like you.
Right.
But it's a way of keeping himself in a box and away from people, which he's done an excellent job of for almost 35 years.
And let's remind everyone the documentary.
Yeah, Morning Sun, which is a film about my mom's murder and the process that I went through trying to recover from that.
All right, let's take a call. Question for Dave. This is from somebody named Mary. Mary?
Mary?
Hello.
Hey.
Hi, Mary.
This is such a lame question.
There are no lame questions.
Wait till you hear the answer. Go ahead, Mary.
Does your Catholic school upbringing, even though it was short, have anything to do with it now? Do you reflect back on that?
No,
help, or did it make it worse?
It didn't. My Catholic school, the school itself, didn't impact me in any which way in terms of where I'm at today. I don't identify as a Catholic, but listen, if there's a set of rules that people believe in that bring them happiness.
Well, I was going to say, even now, even you with your punk rock rejection religion would argue, I think today, that if somebody gives somebody a sense of fulfillment and just from a pragmatic standpoint, fine.
Well, no, I'm back on Catholicism because they take a vow of poverty, which I would like to see some of these evangelicals do.
Yeah. Ah.
Right? Yeah.
Okay, but that's more of a political issue.
That means that their motivation is to live through Christ. I like that.
Sure.
I never know when somebody's coming off a Learjet whether they're really, truly living through Christ.
Well, one would argue that they're on their way to spread the word.
And they need a jet.
And they got to get there quickly.
They
got to
get there quick.
Hey, Mary. Yeah. Mary, did your experience affect you?
There. It has now. It's starting to back. It's coming back again.
Coming back
negatively,
negatively or positively?
No, in a good way.
Okay,
in a good way. Positively. That's what's happening to a lot of punk
rockers. I hear that. I hear that a lot. Yeah. People returning to, and not just Catholicism, but in a lot of different ways, going back to or returning to or restoration to what they may be left behind to move away from, to investigate other types of experiences.
Well, truly, what I think is a lot of the trauma that happened to a lot of people in Catholic school upbringings.
Of course.
It was the messenger, not the message.
Of course, yeah.
In a lot of those cases.
I think that's a great point.
So, you know, and then a lot of people had some really tough messengers. And so they have looked at the entire faith as something to be afraid of, as a fearful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now, having some distance from it, it's faith, and however faith works in somebody's life that brings them fulfillment, as you say, I'm totally supportive of.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really none of my business what brings other people
exactly
their wholeness and their beauty and their grace.
The Pope that died that was so popular, which one was the John, the last one? He had an encyclical where he said, faith and reason are the two wings upon which humans contemplate truth or something like that. But the point is he was struggling, allowing both.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And help us, you know, to ascend to meaning using whatever we have available to us.
I think we are progressing. I do. I feel we are progressing globally slowly.
I don't know.
But we're progressing.
I don't know either.
It seems like it's getting more divisive to me.
Okay.
Well, I don't want the people that are progressing to do something that I think a lot of people do, which is just withdraw. Because the society is so sick.
We
need to be soldiers in the society and show what grace is like, what forgiveness looks like, how it actuates. You know what I mean? And I think a lot of people are just, I get it, that. Like,
I would agree, yes.
I just came back from a week-long retreat, as you know, where I was in workshops on forgiveness.
Wow.
7 hours a day.
That's fantastic.
It was essentially rehab for people who are, you know,
guilty.
Well, who have forgiveness issues. Well, they offer all types of services, but the number one person that I had to work on was myself.
That's usually the way it
goes. That was the tricky one. Yeah. So you write down the list, and then it comes to you, and you're like, oh,
yeah,
they didn't tell me this on the flyer.
No, I
had to look at my own stuff.
No. Well, but it was, they never tell you that on the flyer.
No.
So when is this movie? Where can I see this Mournful Sun?
Right now.
Oh, no, it's on everything.
It's on
iTunes and Amazon.
Amazon? Okay, I want to see that.
Oh, it's good. I'm surprised we didn't.
We haven't seen it.
You didn't tell me the other night. I didn't know. How long has it been out?
I was having you on to talk about you. Hey, Bob, let me tell you about these projects I got going on.
Wait, Dave, was it the...
Not exactly.
It's M-O-U-R-N. Yeah,
yeah,
it's not,
morning.
It's a play on the words. Yeah. That's what I wanted to get at.
So, have you seen it?
Yeah.
And I got to see it tonight.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I can get it on my phone right now, actually, Amazon Plus.
You should watch
account.
It right now. I can send you the link, though. You don't have to.
No, I have the membership thing.
Okay, you got
it. You just
got
to technically know how to do it. But so what, for people, just, I don't think a lot of people know how long it drug on for, from when your mom's death happened to the guy. I remember I was with you when the guy was out on a windowsill in Texas.
That was like
15 years later. How long was it?
So this
thing drug on. Drug.
Yeah, the murder took place in 1983. My mom was killed by her then boyfriend, which again, definite signs of mental illness that were overlooked, especially in the 80s. And there was not a whole lot of resources that we knew of. And when the murder took place, this guy went on the run, and he was gone for 8-9 years.
It's crazy, man.
Like,
just
took off.
Disappeared.
Well, in this video, he goes back and visits him.
Oh, yeah, I go back to the jail and visit
him.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
So, if you want to talk about a feeling of unsafety.
Wow.
For a decade of my life, like, you know.
Oh,
what
you
mean?
Didn't know where he was?
No.
Oh, my God.
No. And he's going to come after me. He's going to come after my family.
Oh, God.
You know, so we didn't know. The film really kind of focuses on all of that and just the trauma. I mean, because, you know, the one thing that people don't think about when it comes to those kinds of violent crimes is that, you know, there's the loss, but you have to table the loss because now, instead of mourning, you're going down to the police station to answer a bunch of questions.
Okay.
And then there's security, and then there's, you know,
how old
fear.
Were you then?
I was 15.
Yeah. Oh. Jesus.
So it's like, you know, the family doesn't come over and you mourn together. You just, it's just autopilot. That's why I feel for these
action.
Parkland people who are now all of them
political.
trying to deal with their loss, but they have this whole movement of this whole arrangement of things that they have to do to put things into place because there's no room for grieving.
Isn't that what a lot of people do, though, in mourning?
They
try to avoid it and get
for
into...
For sure.
When my mom died, everyone was so focused on food. Like, who's bringing what food afterwards?
Yeah,
and I was
that's how
she's
people manage
dead.
It.
Yeah. My mom is dead. Anybody going to ask me how I'm doing?
Yeah.
They're all talking about food.
Yeah, it's a way to deflect some of the pain because it's intense. I mean, it's very intense.
And a lot of people aren't comfortable...
Right.
Addressing it to someone in mourning. They don't have those tools.
I'm still thinking a lot about what we do in this country we're in right now, and it makes me wonder if that's not a good thing where people are able to deflect, you know, not have to really dig into the intense stuff that we're all used to dealing with and we're okay with, and use a symbol. I'm caring for you. Here's some food.
I think that is part of it as well.
We could use a little bit of that
everywhere.
Right
how are you doing would be nice.
I'm with you. No, I'm with you.
But with the other fruitcakes over there.
My head is still in the solution thing. What are we going to do? Mm-hmm. And I still don't know what the answer is.
Well, in my mom's case, we're not going to smoke. How about that?
Well,
I just lost my uncle
and then we won't
to
be
diabetes.
Leaving. Oh, okay, diabetes.
I just
too,
lost my
right?
uncle to diabetes through a heart attack because the diabetes over the years was left relatively. It was treated, but not well enough.
Well, people don't understand that diabetes. How diabetes does is damage. It's a vascular disease.
Yes,
it causes microvascular destruction of all kinds of structures, and then the coronary arteries and the cerebral vascular arteries get involved, and the kidney arteries.
So we've been dealing with a lot of loss in our family this year. My grandmother also passed away in March. And, you know, I've just been working with my mom to try to move in a direction of talking.
So her brother and mom died?
Yeah, in the same year. And so, you know, we had the estate to deal with. We had the probate to deal with. We had all that stuff. And, you know, for the most part, I've just been walking my mom through some of the feelings that she's having and the anger and, you know, just trying to help normalize that process you go through. Because people don't know there's a process. And they don't know where they are in that process. And my mom doesn't know why she's getting angry with her grandson.
Right.
So and has no idea why she feels so dysregulated. She's depressed.
So we're very naive about we've been sort of pretended emotions don't exist or don't have needs.
Right.
We've sort of pretended that that's all some sort of something we've grown past. We're in the modern life now where these things are that's incidental. That's not as important.
Well, the Kubler-Ross book helped me a lot over the years.
With
I don't
law.
Know if somebody ever helped the stages of death.
Okay.
Right. I didn't read it. It was in college. Somebody suggested to me. I had it. I like it. And I read it and read it. Then she died, and you'll love this as a joke. I thought, is her husband reading this book right now? but I've suggested it to people who've lost people, especially parents who have lost their child to addiction. They just, been there, done that, or I don't need that.
Well, not only that,
they can't share great stuff because people are so.
I feel like there's a worse resistance, which is. Oh, I read about her stuff. They say that's not true. Or they say, I've read about it. And people get, she was not right.
It's on the internet, they say Kubler-Ross isn't true.
Right. And so people get these.
Some of it didn't apply to me, but definitely some of it was spot on. Why wouldn't you be trying to find
also,
something?
I'll be open to learning. That's what we need.
That's true.
Open
but
to
also
change.
Sometimes being like the son of a dead loved one, I took on the role of the identified, traumatized person. Mm-hmm. So someone handing me a book like that would punctuate and underline me feeling as like, oh, you're the identified traumatized person.
Right.
You're the different one.
Right.
You're the weird one.
Okay.
And it was very – and that's a reality that happens.
All right. So – but what was missing, I would argue, and what is missing overall, and you and I have talked about this, is the ability to tolerate closeness. Because if you could get close to somebody who is not also a drug addict or identifying with your BS at the time
– right, right.
Someone who just was there with you and for you, you might have moved through that.
For sure.
And that's how we
drug
change.
Addicts don't associate with those types of people, Drew. Not really.
Well, we don't even know them.
I know.
Well, I wasn't a junkie back then.
But
at 15, I wasn't.
Yeah. No, but by the time...
Oh, by the way, one of the huge mistakes we made around that time was we decided that adolescent was the repository of all wisdom. They know best. We don't... He's doing fine. He seems fine.
Yeah.
Then 16,
we did?
In the 60s? Are you kidding? That was all about adolescence.
No, it was in the 80s.
Not my family.
I'm saying, but after the 60s, 70s, we decided, hey, man, look what we're doing on college campuses right now. These are people that can't wipe their butts, and we're looking
to can't pay their cell phone bills, but we're going to live according to them.
And they are determining the philosophical sort of tone of this country right now. That is insane. Mm-hmm. That's insane. I want to hear from them, mm-hmm. and that they have value, but to say they are the repository of all that is wise, mm-hmm. no. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. They're good, and they mean well, and I love to hear from them.
They have a lot of passion.
It's interesting, though, because today on Chris Wallace, did you happen to see that, mm-hmm. this morning show this morning? They had a father from Parkland who lost a daughter, and then they had a young girl who was a student. And the father, understandably, was so full of rage and anger and was just like, we got to fix the system.
Yeah.
The girl was making a lot of sense. So as much as I agree with what you're saying about the age differences and us trying to listen to them and take their words to heart, she resonated more with me because she was at her age coming from an emotional place.
Well, which is
that
another,
had to me was more powerful.
And I also agree with you that we need to look to other generations than the ones that are walking around right now because we're the problem.
Well, I
agree with that.
I did see that. I did see that this morning. I did, yeah. And she had a sense about her of a lot of wisdom.
Yes,
she really did, and I thought that she did a great job around her. You know, containing her own.
Is that the blonde one or the shaved head one?
The blonde one with glasses.
Yes, yeah, she. Because they're attacking and saying it was stage and they were actors. There's you know, all the right wing wackos.
Yeah.
And she just went back at them on BuzzFeed, mm-hmm. live. She was amazing.
She's been amazing.
Right?
Yeah, and the father is so brave, too, being in the state that he's in to go on and
really,
discuss.
Just let's stop for a second. There's really people that think that that's faked.
Well, they
How
think
stupid
that,
are people?
That Sandy, projection.
I mean, that's like Alex Jones land. You know what I mean?
But there's a lot of them.
Oh, I know.
But you guys, we need to start not being tolerant.
I just called them
Bob's
stupid.
Good at that.
Yeah, not being tolerant. Because you know what? That opinion, invalid. And we're not going to listen to you. Shut up. Get them out of here. The person that's making these kids feel worse, that they're
I need
actors.
To adopt some right. of that
but
attitude.
It's a term.
Get out of here.
It's a
Scram.
Term. It's, Get out it's here. A term like they're actors or something.
Who would say such a thing under these circumstances?
These evildoers.
Bob comes up with evildoers.
This aggression will not stand, man.
This segues into Andrew Breitbart.
Okay, so hold on. We got to take a break. But I would also argue that those evildoers, so-called, are welcome on the ship with the rest of us. But until they get their crap together, I'm sorry. No,
I'm the expert at how to treat people nastily. No, they don't get on the ship at all.
We have to become here's my bottom line.
Lifeboats.
We have to become pragmatic, right? Mm-hmm. When we're ideological, first thing that happens is we can't see each other's point of view because we're stuck in our ideologies. Second thing that happens, we're very much prone to being manipulated by propaganda. Bring the world's expert
sure,
in. Bring the world's expert in. Russian comes on in and starts doing it. We got to get out of ideological camps into pragmatic
Question
solution.
For you, though.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, we had the right, we had the left, same as we do now.
Yep.
And it almost felt safer to be able to disagree.
Yeah.
Why is it that now it's hatred and distrust and disgust instead of like we honor your choice to have a different view?
We become ideologically entrenched, so we've refused to look at anything other than our own sort of echo chamber ideology of the world.
But it becomes like pack mentality.
It becomes like the way 2-year-olds behave.
Yeah,
right. That's what 2-year-olds do. I want my way.
It's like gangs now.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's start.
Breitbart
let's take
we get
a
back.
Break and Breitbart when we get back.
All right, be right back. Friends at Bergamot are back. It's, of course, a brand that's made an impact on us here. It makes a variety of supplements. They use the extract of the bergamot citrus fruit. It's full of polyphenols. It's a supplement that acts as a natural statin and may improve a number of cardiovascular conditions and fatty liver disease, as well as potentially high blood pressure and other things associated with the metabolic syndrome. Now the makers are bringing you a formulation called Bergamot Sport that provides all the same cardiovascular benefits, but with some additives designed to aid athletes and those with an active lifestyle. Bergamot Sport may help improve stamina as well as reduce recovery time and muscle inflammation. In an ongoing study, professional soccer players were asked to use Bergamot Sport, and the documented improvements have been impressive. I use the product. First Lady of Loves uses the product, the Bergamot Femme.
Physicians and cardiologists around the world are recommending it. For a limited time, our listeners can save 10% on their order by entering the code DRDREW at checkout. That's Dr. Drew at checkout, all one word. To try Bergamet Sport for yourself, visit bergamet.com. That is BERGAMET.com. Or also you can click on the Bergamet banner at drdrew.com. Be sure to talk to your physician before you use any Bergamet products. In fact, before you use any product or supplement, be sure to talk to your doctor.
And we are back. Again, that number is, I'm going to get it right for you guys, 323.
Oh, 632
something. No. 649-8268.
We should just stream it across the bottom. There it is. It's right up on the board.
All right, well, that's okay. Nate knows what he's doing.
So we're going to pick up with Breitbart.
All
right,
what's the deal?
Okay. So Dave and I were talking before the show about a show that Jane's Addiction Thelonious Monster played for Father's Rights in what, 1988?
In 89. That was for a member of Fishbone.
Norwood.
Norwood's
his girlfriend had taken off with their kid, the father had no rights, right? Andrew Breitbart was a part of that. Do you know that?
No, you're kidding me.
Yes, Andrew Breitbart was a college student, liberal, who hung out with... Norwood knows him really well, right?
You got to understand something.
It's crazy. He lived near you in Westwood.
So he was...
He's the guy who invented it, but
he was
a liberal.
One of us?
He was one. He helped with the father's benefit.
You got to be kidding
Wait,
me.
Wait,
no.
Drew's going to explain it.
No, I'm not going to explain it. I knew Andrew, and he was a very reasonable person, a pragmatist. He was a true liberal, a liberal in the sense that this is a Western liberal society we live in. The far left and the far right have taken over from all of us. Now, his thing started in a more almost a sort of libertarian sort of point of view. That was really his thing. But it went off and he died. And he was one of the greatest guys, so smart. And really, no one I know didn't like him.
Can we look up what year? How old was he in 89, Drew? Since he died, he was 43. Age, you know that the guy who started this died years ago.
I didn't know that.
So it's been taken over by Bannon and these whack jobs.
But I was just getting to know him when he died. It was really terrible. And he just seemed like the greatest guy. And I was a little surprised, frankly. He mostly wanted to sort of... He was fighting the very stuff we're talking about.
So what caused the shift in this guy?
He died.
He didn't really shift.
He died.
He was fighting ideological entrenchment.
Right.
And they, you know, when you do that, they make you the bad guy. They make you this. They call you the worst thing. You're a Nazi or whatever.
He was 20 years old in 1989.
Oh my God!
It's crazy.
And so he started fighting back, and when he fought back, it made him look a little more whatever. But I didn't know him well. I don't know the story well. But that was my sense of it at the time.
But it has become so fringy. It went over. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. And so that all happened after he died.
Seems to have.
So it's similar to how iPhones are now terrible after Steve Jobs died.
Yes.
Well, the Tim guy makes the batteries run down, so you'll buy a new one.
Unbelievable. It's almost like the day he died, Apple just became terrible.
How many updates have you gotten in the last 3 months? Three.
I've gotten four since I've been here.
And I refuse to update.
The worst.
So let's stay in the solution again. What are we going to do? What are we going to do, guys? What do we do here?
Look what happened because if Andrew Breitbart was representing the radical center, which is what I'm proselytizing,
that's really what he was.
The radical center, right? Yeah, mm-hmm. He was being crucified and being called a alt-right by the left because he was criticizing college campuses and all the wacky far-left stuff that goes on. He then obviously had to congregate with some people.
Yes.
Right?
It pushed the camps.
He was first at Huffington Post, right. And then he started Breitbart.
But Huffington Post still leans pretty left.
No, everybody went.
Ariana Huffington was a Republican, if you've lived long enough to remember.
I remember. I knew her. I knew her reasonably well.
Wow.
And she was all about family values and things
like
that.
But I'm talking now.
I was backstage with her.
The right and left have pulled us so out of whack, we don't know where the center is
anymore.
That's
why when you ask the question, where do we start, it has to start with ourselves on individual basis.
Okay, so
Voltaire
said that in the end of Candide. He said, il faut cultiver nos jardins, take care of your garden, which to me is a bigger... piece than just the plot of land.
I may not agree with what you have to say, but I defend to the death your right to say it.
Right.
And so Voltaire.
All right, Voltaire.
Yeah, and which is also kind of what we're talking about, right? The freedom to speak, and you know, we want you to speak, but take care of your family, your community, your garden, your immediate region. I think I agree with that wholeheartedly. But what you really forget about Arianna Huffington, remember Mike Huffington?
He was a Republican
turned out
senator.
He was her husband, and it turned out he was gay, and it was a scandal. Mm. Do you remember this whole thing?
I don't.
And then she started her own little post. I was backstage with her at the late night show back when it was Keith
Olbermann?
No, somebody else. Before Ferguson, it was way back.
Okay.
And we were backstage, and I was talking about stuff like this. I was talking about people caring for each other and closeness, and she goes, "That's it. That's what we got. I'm so glad you're talking about this. That's what I want to get behind." And then she became Huffington Post.
I mean, it really does have to start, in my humble opinion, it does have to start with being kind to one another and to have a sense of whatever your sense of faith or connection is, or connectedness to other human beings. And working on your own self-love, self-care, self-forgiveness.
I'm wondering.
It sounds really airy and spiritual.
No, but it's very practical. It's very practical.
But it's like we were talking about the other night, Bob. Service.
Yeah. Yes.
If service becomes our number one priority,
then nothing's a chore. Everything is a projection of my own internal world. But it would
create a massive global shift if everybody made that their priority.
Yeah, selfless service, not Jolie's type service where you're.
But that's why getting
the world.
Right,
simple little acts of service, simple acts.
But
of
getting
service.
Good with yourself and in that self forgiveness, as we project as human beings onto others, we project what it is that is internal. If we took care of our internal life and our internal world, we would not project violence and rage onto others, and we would not try to take advantage and microaggress towards everyone else if we internally were working on ourselves. So I think the key is to go inward first,
100%.
And then move outward with that internal landscape that is compassion, joy, and forgiveness.
And here's the difficult challenge, because that work is individual. For you know, what works for one person doesn't
can't
work for the other person, right? And so everybody here in this room has
their version, their
practices, whatever it is. And, you know, Bob and I see things very differently in terms of like the great beyond, but they're a lot closer than you would think if you really break it down. But what one thing works for him, one thing works for me, and it keeps us.
We were talking about
in a good
Gloria
space.
Scott, right? So I was having all this trouble. Dave and a bunch of friends were trying to help me for years, and I was so argumentative about God. So then I went to the person who didn't believe in God, and I said, well, how do you make AA work for you? And she told me, and I adopted that, and I've been sober ever since.
Tell us.
That you replace the God concept with service, right? Mm-hmm. Now, it's a jip. It works really good, but it's much easier just to pray than to go out at 3 o'clock in the morning every time somebody asks.
Right.
So service keeps you occupied, which she was OCD and type A personality and narcissist. I am. It works for me because it distracts me away from being destructive with my OCD and narcissism. It's just like I go into this mode where like, oh my God, we got to figure this out.
Right.
Like Sherlock Holmes.
But there's also built-in loopholes such as progress, not perfection, which is to remind us that we are in fact human and to not have expectations.
Too much expectations.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like allow yourself to be human.
Well, I think a lot of us with PTSD and trauma have a really hard time being patient with ourselves and forgiving ourselves because our wiring just didn't get that message coming in. Mm-hmm. When we were in very formative aspects of our functioning, we were not given the appropriate sort of parameters to which to experience the type of environments that make brains think certain ways.
Right.
And so we all kind of come together now as post, you know, working through a lot of these issues. And I think we can see things now with a lot of hindsight about what stages of development we were, you know, sort of traumatized aspect.
Well, four of us know what you're talking about, but I feel like we got to come up with something that the average person really gets.
Then I need some money.
Like you want a concrete.
I need some money.
Well, like for instance, I'm not sure I want a concrete plan. I thought that Black Panther went a long way to bringing everyone into the tent. Really thought, did you see it?
I haven't seen it yet.
It, you'll love it.
I haven't seen it.
It brings people together.
Okay.
And I feel like that's the first thing. First thing is like, let's acknowledge everybody's
against everything.
Yeah. No, it doesn't. In a way.
Me and my fear of people, it does.
No, but people have been causing and reacting to things forever. And a lot of great things have come from the reaction of rejecting something. AA only exists because the Oxford group didn't work for Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson. So they went and took what they felt was good about it and made a new thing that was more flexible, more fluid, more philosophical.
I know, but Oxford group only had 8 steps, and that's much easier to do.
You like them better.
But you had to be a Methodist, though. You had to
whatever.
8 steps.
I'm in.
I think they still have 8-step programs.
And we know a lot about the 12-step meetings in Los Angeles. The really good ones started as a reaction to an old one that people didn't like, and they started it on the other side. And I think right now stuff like that's going on with the Black Panther movie and this kind of movement in one direction is a rejection of the old direction. And we live in a mob mentality where we're off with their heads. We want the people that are running the meetings that we don't like to lose their jobs. Instead of just go start a meeting that you do like and don't worry about that person.
Right. I kind of feel like we need a new myth, though, to organize that.
People have the power. They do. Yeah. And they don't believe they think ideology has the power.
I know. They think power is all that's important, which is the anathema. Power is not important. They think that facts don't matter. Power is all that exists. That's a very sad place to exist.
Money and fame, I think they think are very important. I don't know about
that's power. That's postmodern.
But I mean, but the other problem is that this age of social media that didn't exist when we were coming up
be dead.
I mean, it has created.
I would have killed myself.
It has created. It has created, and you know, listen, I use social media for work and things I got to do, but it has created. It's like a viral narcissism.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what
but
I mean?
But how insecure you were when you were 20 years old and you were in a band and it was being celebrated, and you could go online and just read a bunch of negative stuff about yourself all night long.
I would never have made it.
Would have
made it.
And how these kids survive is a testament in resilience.
Yeah.
Right? Well, I have a 17-year-old, and she is on that phone. You know, for almost
how does she deal
everything.
With negative things? If something negative is said about her, how does she deal
she
with it?
She has a good sense of self. She kind of doesn't care. Mm. She kind of
does
considers
she read
the
it?
Source.
Does she read it? Or?
She
wow.
can read it. She considers the
wow,
source.
They're
and
making hybrids out there, Dave.
You
can't do it still
that's some
to this
David
day.
Icke reptilian agenda kind of stuff going on.
She has some self-esteem, right? She
yeah.
doesn't care so much what everyone thinks. She will consider the source, but she's also open to criticism as well.
Well, be careful with the self-esteem. I think that's been overdone, right? Because what she has is a sense of self.
Okay.
She understands her worth, and it's not a grandiose
well, she has
sense of
some.
Worth.
But I do think that it has contributed a little bit, and this is just me humbly saying this again, a little bit a compare and despair lifestyle because mm-hmm. people are only
that's envy, man, and that's narcissism.
But people are only showing a picture of them on the yacht.
Yep.
They're showing them a picture at the club, mm-hmm. A picture at this amazing show, and they're putting those things up only or amazing. You know what I mean? And it's mm-hmm. not the whole picture,
right?
But people go
that
through there and
important.
Look at that. And go, why is my life not look
yeah,
like this?
And I have to say, I'm guilty of the same thing. Just because I am more private, so I'll just put things that are kind of benign and nothing that's real, you know, controversial or nothing that's real personal. Just out of fear of you know eliciting responses that I really can't manage.
We're getting some calls. I want to go to these calls for okay. Dave here. Okay, this is Sierra. Has been very very patiently waiting. Sierra, go ahead.
Oh.
Hey,
hi.
There you are.
Thank you.
I have a question for Dave. On this recent season of the Tattoo Boss show. I'm sorry, my boyfriend watches it, and I've been like getting really into it recently.
Okay.
Matt, I'm in love with Matt, and y'all voted him off.
That's right. He had to go. Had to go.
He was so good. And I, like,
did he have a cool hat?
So, I felt like he was so good.
He was great.
Like, have you?
Have I what?
Are there any thoughts of like bringing people back on later seasons that like fan favorites?
Nah, I can't really speak to that because we're currently in the middle of the season. But what I can tell you is that the way that season works, the way the current season works, is worst tattoo of the day goes home. And he was a great artist, and that's part of the game. And it's, you know what, there's a lot more to just artistry in that game. It's strategy. So the other artist handed out a canvas that would be difficult for him specifically because they were playing the game, and that's why he got knocked out. Otherwise, in the real world, he's an amazing artist.
Isn't it weird? Dave is the guy. He's the guy. When you got your first tattoo, was it Bob Roberts?
Bob Roberts.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Everybody's.
And hang on. This is Josh. Shelly had to do something different. Josh, go ahead. Josh.
Hi, guys. I just had a question for Dave. I was interested if he, without sharing too much personal stuff, if he was willing to kind of tell us about the framework of that forgiveness retreat. And was it all 7 days about forgiveness? Or what was his epiphany, if he had it?
Wow, that is a deeply personal question, but I did bring it up. What I will say was, yes, it was every single day. It was about 7 hours a day. So we would do 3 hours in the morning, break for lunch. We'd do another 2 hours, break for dinner.
Of group or individual? What'd you do?
Of group.
Group. Yeah.
And it was literally, I mean, you want to know what's funny is that a Cliffside Malibu commercial came
inspired
on.
Inspired him to go.
Yeah. And I was like, God, I miss rehab. I was like, I really wish there was a day, you know, like a trip I could take that was like structured, but it had a beautiful view, you know, because I don't want to get loaded, but like, there's got to be something out there. So I researched and I found this place. And, you know, it really, the idea, really the epiphany, and it's, you got to kind of go through the course to understand it, but really the idea behind forgiveness is to really unburden yourself of carrying around the negativity. It's not in any way saying that you're not okaying behaviors. Like, for instance, mm-hmm. I'm not saying my mom's killer is off the hook and like, you know, that's all cool with me. Mm-hmm. But what I am trying to work on is unburdening myself of the hate so I can walk through this world lighter.
Mm-hmm. See, and he just touched on something, Drew, which is America wants cartoon, simple, black-white solutions that's what they think. If you go there and you can forgive him, then you're okay and then it's everything's fine and happily ever after and let's have a commercial.
Everything. But it's a
and
process.
And it's not like that. Therapy's not like that. Life is not
the
like
other
that.
Thing is, in order to change your feeling states and whatever else you're trying to work on, you must change. And we resist that. We are wired in such a way that change of our emotional landscape induces the same sort of pushback, same sort of defensive sort of maneuver, sometimes more so than if somebody was trying to attack our body, mm-hmm. like cut a limb off mm-hmm. in some sort of way. So our brain naturally fights against change. And you have to be willing to push through that. Then, however uncomfortable it is, and by the way, if your treatment is too comfortable, it probably isn't good treatment.
Yeah.
You now start looking at things. You're in a different place. Mm-hmm. So you look at things differently as you grow and evolve. You literally are looking at things like completely, I mean.
Yeah, what you used to think was a certain way, then you move away from it. You look at it from a different perspective of positivity, and I think you can see more from a positive place. I think you can see more depth.
I remember
I think
in
you
therapy,
have a better view.
I remember in therapy just thinking, I used to feel that way about that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like that didn't even bother me anymore. It doesn't even think about it. It's like they used to really trouble me because whatever my own mm-hmm. stuff was.
Yeah, having a 17-year-old is like looking at your own stuff just manifesting into you know, and everything I look at, I was like, okay, yeah, that's a good thing. Ooh, that one. Mm-hmm. Well, where? I could feel that inside me. Yeah, that's there. Okay, how do I treat myself? So then how do I treat her? Right. And so it's this relationship that you have when you have teens, and it's different than when you have little kids, because little kids are like, hey, I love you. And then teens are like, hey,
I need to get away from you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What
not
do you want?
All of them. Not all of them. I got two little ones. Sydney, and Drew pointed something out because I you know, Elvis kind of loves everybody type kid, right? Mm-hmm. Really good kid, right?
Did he get that from you?
No, I thought he did. But Drew said sometimes kids are just born a certain amiable
constitution. Yeah.
Yeah. That it's not anything environmental. Sydney, on the other hand, her words like, no, I don't like that. Get away from me. Don't touch me. You try to kiss a little 1.5-year-old baby. She's like, puts her hand in your face when you're trying to kiss her.
My favorite.
Is that genetics too?
My favorite version of that was when Adam Carolla's daughter was 1.5 or 2. And he went, he goes, come on, let me pick you up. And she goes, poo-poo. Like, I'm a poo-poo. don't get near me. I'm poo-poo.
Well, Ivy was kind of, she's a real special little angel. So now having her as a teen, you know, is an interesting look into the job that you do as with a young child and how it comes to fruition and how they start to treat others and how they sort of actuate their own experiences in the world. And she is, you know, she's definitely a teen up in the bedroom with, you know, she plays guitar. She has a tailor and,
she have
you
a
know.
Lock on her door?
She does.
I see.
She does. Nice.
Well, she earned it. I mean,
she has a lock on her door.
Yeah.
Drew has a thing about locks on the
but
doors.
But she doesn't use it that often.
Trust but verify, man.
Did you have a lock on your door when you
I
were
I did
kid?
When I was around, when I turned on about 15, I had a lock. Yeah. I got a lock.
Yeah,
I
mean, you get a lock.
If she earned it, fine.
But tell your thing about the locks on the doors. Because kids want them for sure.
Well, no, the parents are like, well, I give them their personal space wherever they want. Like,
well, you know what it's about?
No,
it's about masturbation, Drew. That's why it is.
Many times the males, yeah. for sure. And
yeah, but I also did not have
males.
No. But I mean, the males for sure.
That was a misogynist thing.
No. I'm saying the
but
women.
But I didn't have the internet when I was 15. Yeah,
the women being more complex.
I don't know that I'd
have
the
reasons for it.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
And who knows what nefarious stuff, but as long as they.
I knew when Elijah, my older son, wanted a lock on the door. You were around. He was like 12, and he was like, don't you think I should have a lock on my door? And I said, what for?
Why?
And then I started talking to Hoy about it, Chris Hoy, and he was like, you know, Bobby?
Come on, Bobby.
I can't believe you missed that. How did you miss the sign?
He was only 12.
Only 12?
I was rocking at 12. I think long before.
Of course.
I'm from Orange County. I don't even
know that I knew what I was doing. I just knew that it was working.
Right. It was working, and we're going to do it more.
I didn't equate it as a sexual thing.
Don't you think parents need to know about their sexuality of their teenagers, and they don't want to?
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Well, it's challenging, I have to say, because I'm having to walk through it, and you know, it's very challenging to efface, you know, your fears and the thing. And also, I have this, you know, this background, too, that sort of kind of comes out in my parenting. And I find myself yesterday, I was in my daughter's room going through the stuff, and I go, I really feel like my mother right now. I really don't want to continue. And we were just making a joke about how I just was acting like my mother. You know, going through her clothes.
It's inevitable.
And it seems inevitable. So I'm really pushing against, like, trying to forge my own territory.
And if she did something good, and if mom did something good, you can adopt it. It's okay. You don't have to not be her thoroughly.
Let's go through some door knocking. Do you remember once you were playing music and you were going out with, say, a gal, and you went to her parents' house to knock on her door to take her out? What was the parents' interpretation of that?
I always was well-received. I really was.
Come on.
I was.
Yes. Dude, I remember you when you were 18 when James started,
right? Yeah.
I would not want you dating my daughter.
I was just a kid.
We're learning about Bob.
Listen, those parents would much rather have that kid date their daughters than this one.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because at 18, I didn't know anything.
Right.
You know what I mean?
But Dave.
But I was never harmful.
Dave always had a nice disposition about him.
I was always very courteous.
Kind
I always looked
courteous.
The parents in the eyes. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You knew how to do it.
I tried. I did what I could.
So right. Has that happened to you?
Trying.
Has that happened?
Ivy was in a relationship for 3 years.
And were you? Did you keep an arm's distance? Did you have an opinion?
No, of course I worked with them. I was like, okay, guys, what stage are we in now? What's going on with you?
Can you make them a therapist for a mother?
Yeah, that's crazy.
I was like, okay, so when you decide that you want to do this, okay, here's what I'd like to happen, and this is what I prefer, and, you know, what do you think?
But are you able to detach the feelings as a mother as you are in a
therapeutic? I go in my room And I go, oh my God.
Yeah. Oh no.
And I cringe and I cringe and I cringe, but I don't want to hang. I don't want her or any teen to be hung up. I want
I don't
them
hung
to
up,
be.
But I do want them to be a open. Little uncomfortable talking to their parents.
They're
but
uncomfortable.
Yeah, it seems
they
normal
were
to me.
Very
yeah.
uncomfortable.
And so what I do is I go, what I used to do is go, okay, here, I'm going to go, and you tell me when you want me to stop. And they would quickly,
stop. Oh, yeah, definitely. Oh, they got very uncomfortable with the conversation.
That seems like a way they sort of have a boundary around all this.
Yeah.
It seems right to me.
They just shut down.
Well, they're sort of like, okay. I said, look, then when you're ready for more, I'm ready.
But I mean, the fact of the matter is they already know it anyway.
They're pretty confused. You'd be surprised.
You think?
They know it, but look what the lessons are. It's the internet.
Oh, my God.
It's terrible.
Yeah, they're confused.
Well, it's such a fine line. As a parent, you don't – you know, when I was going through it, I was just like, well, you treat people with respect. Respect mm-hmm. yourself. You mm-hmm. treat the girl with respect. Mm-hmm. But then I also didn't want him hooking up and acting like they're married. You know what
right,
I mean? Because
right,
that was
right,
my
right,
tendency
right.
at 17, 18, 20.
Yeah.
So, but then you don't want to encourage them playing the field either. It's this weird place for parents.
Yeah, it's a very interesting place, but it taps into all that stuff. You go back when you were younger, and then you try to move forward, and you try to think about what you would have liked to happen, you know, how you would have liked to have been treated.
This is actually pertinent to what we're talking about. It's an email received at doctor.com/contact. From Charlotte, I'm currently writing my dissertation on whether counselors who are former addicts are more effective than counselors which are not.
Mm. Well, I think the addict always thinks that they can only be treated by someone who is an addict, but I don't think that's true.
She wants literature recommendations. Does anybody publish literature on this? There's tons of literature on empathic attunement.
Okay.
And having been an addict in recovery, it makes
she
you automatically.
Wants to be a
therapist? But I mean, current addicts, guys who were addicts currently. Got
sober.
Reelected. Who was the Canadian guy, the crazy, the crack addict guy?
The
mayor.
The mayor. Yeah.
He got reelected?
Yeah, didn't he get reelected after?
At one point, then he died.
He died?
Yeah, he's dead.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I kept saying, we're watching this guy die.
But her dissertation, she wants me in the helping field? Is that how you're
she
reading
wants,
that?
She wants to review literature, scientific literature, on whether it is truly the case or not.
I
would too.
Drug addicts, no matter what, through the process, ask every single person at one time or another in a 30-day period of time if they're addicts. They ask the doctors, they ask the psychologists, they ask the nurses, they ask because addicts are looking for people that they think understand. Now the addicts aren't in charge, luckily.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But you know, remember how I needed you guys around desperately? That for the non-addict, you can be a very effective clinician, but there's things that – there are blind spots you have because you're not an addict.
Yeah.
And I used to rely on you guys very heavily for that.
Good at spotting it.
No, because I can remember times I would come out of these sessions. I go, Bob, somebody had been in treatment for a while, and I was like, God, she just revealed to me these incredible things, and she was emotive.
I was like, don't believe it.
And he goes, he goes, yeah, she wants to get high.
Well, anyway. That definitely is the point.
Yeah,
definitely.
And so I was like, oh, yeah. I got to always remember that.
Yeah, they have a hard time believing that they're telling you what you want to hear,
or whatever it is that the
oh
the
my
priority.
God, I got so good at doing
right.
that.
Right.
Yeah. I could fill out any workbook, any worksheet.
Anything,
I would
remember Exodus, how great it was.
I got so good at that place because they had these forms. He's talking about a treatment center we used to go to. And then it was like your first step form and your second step.
I remember Exodus.
And I got that so wired. I just got.
And then you had to have an answer. What's different this time?
And by the way,
everything. Everything is different.
I'll do whatever you tell me.
Riddle me this, guys.
This time I'm doing it for me. I threw him that one.
So good. They
gets
buy
you in the door.
No, when, I'm buying it. When, I'm buying it. 100%.
One at a time. When we're
telling those counselors those things, you could give us a lie detector test and we believe it.
I know. That's
the crazy thing about it.
So I don't feel so bad buying into it.
So here's what, where when I hear this stuff, where my head goes, and my head's been in this space a little bit. I was hearing about somebody's treatment, and it was very CBT, like you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Like this, we're gonna talk about what are you grateful for? What do you all do? List these things, blah, blah, blah. And I just go, oh, to me it sounds like school or something. Yeah, yeah. And yet CBT works, and I don't understand how it sustains. I don't understand it because it's on such a level that addicts are great at maneuvering that stuff.
It's an intellectualization of things that intellectualization doesn't work on.
Well, you have to, but it does.
But sometimes it does because in order to understand what's emotionally happening, it needs to be in a concise, understandable sentence or phrase or paragraph. So,
let me reframe.
Do you know what I mean? So you can take this huge feeling that you can't wrap your hands around and go, "Oh, I'm just going through this thing right now."
Yeah,
that's all.
Well,
it is.
That makes sense to me, but to make lists about what you're going to do and all this kind of stuff. And
well, the treatment planning. Blah, 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 the treatment planning.
Well, treatment planning is one thing. Is like, what are your goals and what are you going to do?
That's all the individual stuff. What's powerful is that you do it together in group therapy. And I can tell you that Exodus and Los Encinas and some of the places we work at now are good at letting the other clients do the dirty work, right? Mm-hmm. Meaning, it'd be hard for you to say, I'm doing this for me right now with me and Anthony and a bunch of other clients, and they're going, dude, oh, really?
Yeah.
Right? But when a clinician is one-on-one, they can easily believe that bullshit.
Oh, no kidding.
Right?
Tell me about it.
And so now
and I need
so
you
much
guys
treatment,
there, like, kicking my ass.
But so much treatment these days is individual
I know.
Care.
That's why group
and
is so important.
Client-centered. Group. It's client-centered. And so when you have to discuss client-centered treatment with clinicians who aren't in recovery themselves, they get confused of what's client-centered.
No, he's doing it for him.
And what is what?
And what is my delusional system that's manipulating the listener so that I can get out of this room.
All right, we got to wrap up. Now that we've sort of, you know, this is all part and parcel to what we're struggling with.
I wonder if this is exciting for anyone.
In the world, though.
Individual, I can tell you what I'm doing. Fight the good fight to the center.
That's for addiction. What do we do for what Dave wants to get at, which is the health and spiritual?
The mental health issue.
Yeah.
That's what
I'm
saying.
We need money so that we can fund.
For what?
Okay, I'm coming.
Well, you're talking about major mental health issue. He's talking about the sort of general spiritual vacuum.
The encouragement
go to
of
retreats,
the masses.
Clearly.
The encouragement.
That's a helpful tool.
Obviously.
The encouragement of the masses to find a spiritual solution.
Okay.
Right?
What does that mean? Yes, I agree.
It means that the people that are doing it need to talk about it with them and publicly, right? Instead of tell them what to think and manipulate.
So it's good, again, to explore religion, explore family, explore
therapy, right? I always say the back of your insurance card has two phone numbers. One says mental health and
behavioral health.
Call that number and say you want to talk. You want to have a therapy. They'll give you 10 sessions.
I would say, but 10 sessions.
But then you start to realize if all of us spoke more positively about therapy instead of the negative, oh, it doesn't work.
Therapy saved my life.
Also, there's an identification that there's something wrong with you for going.
I think
there's something right with people who want to have therapy.
Agreed. 100%. I would argue that something along the lines of mutual aid societies is where we need to go. Mutual aid societies like 12-step are free, and they work.
Yes.
But they're
filled with all the narcissists and hateful people also. I trust the helping field.
Religion can probably solve some of that stuff.
But you're never going to get away from a group of people. There's always going to be polarizing people within any group. If you get 100 plumbers together, you're not going to like a few of them.
But maybe
you know what I mean?
They're not all going to pipe the same way.
You ever
way.
See that book, Bowling Alone? You heard about this?
No.
That clubs are at an all-time low in this country. Gatherings of people. Maybe we just need more gatherings, more clubby kinds of... I hate clubs. I hate because when you have a club, there's an out. We're in, you're out. I hate that. But maybe an inclusive kind of club, more sort of look for...
Talk to your neighbors
that kind
and
of
talk
thing.
To
yeah.
them about real shit and not bullshit.
All right. Well, we have to kind of wrap it up.
True.
I'll tell you what you can do. You can come to this concert on April 16th.
April 16th, Velasco Theater. It's called Above Ground, and and all the proceeds are going to go to Music Cares to, you know.
Is that the same week they do their big fundraiser and stuff too? Is that a little, it seems like
it's right around that.
It's totally, yeah,
it's like a couple
I don't
weeks
know.
After.
It's a totally independent after. Thing. It's around Coachella, so it's like in between the Coachellas.
And, right.
Oh, okay.
Which is hopefully people will be in town.
And like right. Billy Idol, Courtney Love, Corey Taylor, Navarro.
And other artists
Jesse
yet
Hughes.
To be named yet.
It seems like it's you at the beginning of a great group.
Yeah.
And it's going to, this could be a big thing.
It's going to be
yeah,
pretty,
I wish yeah. you all the it's best exciting. With that.
Yeah, me
thank
too.
You.
It I'll started there. As an idea, and now I'm sitting there going, oh my God, how we got to pull this
when
thing
do you
off.
Start practicing it?
We've started, we've been
you
doing
did?
It. Yeah, we've been learning for months. Because
are you going to wear a pirate shirt?
Of course, well, I will be paying homage. Good. There will not be a fluffy shirt. I will have a stripe.
Oh,
I'll
okay.
have a stripe.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that's right.
God had him
right.
in the answer.
Stripe.
So great.
So cool.
All right,
well,
guys.
You're so great.
You are so great. We really appreciate you for being here. For
hey,
doing
thanks,
that.
Guys.
So,
you're a guy who livens up a room when you walk in.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
Very
nice. Keeps trying to struggle.
Good to see you.
Remind everybody. This life's courtesy of Doctor.com, where you can support the show by clicking on the Amazon banner for all your shopping needs. It keeps us around. You don't pay anything, but it keeps this wind in the sails here. Also, we like hearing from you. As you heard, I will read your emails. Go to Doctor.com/contact and send us your questions. Like us on Facebook. Support our sponsors. While there, the Doctor.com, check out the other other podcasts we have. We have a new health and fitness show called Swole Patrol with Mike Catherwood. I've got Midday Live with Lauren Savant, which is the radio show that we put out on a podcast. And, of course, Adam and Drew podcast, the Dr. Drew podcast. Check them all out. And about to do another Teen Mom reunion as well. So I appreciate your comments as I go on off into that. Also, find us on Twitter, Facebook, at Dr. Drew. At First Lady of Love is Susan, my wife, her the producer. At Rehab Bob Forrest. At This Life Podcast. Shelley, you have a Twitter handle?
Nope.
Okay.
We're getting good for you.
That'll do it. And we'll see you next time.
Take it easy.
Well, we're so pleased to have Hydrolite back. Hydrolite is something that we and my family use just about every day, and it is simply the best oral rehydration product I have ever seen. And there are many reasons you should keep some around. I got the flu. I relied on Hydrolite because I knew it would rehydrate me the way an IV fluid would. We all have heard about the flus and the diarrheas, and they all knock you out. Staying well hydrated is critical to getting over these conditions. Even if you manage to avoid getting infected, your schedule is half as busy as mine. Getting 8 glasses of water a day isn't likely to happen. And you don't need it if you've got the proper hydration product, Hydrolite. That is the beauty. Whether you're sick or not, you can absolutely benefit from proper balance of sodium, glucose, and water. Hydrolite does this better than a sports drink or water alone. That's right, better. And it comes in great flavors like orange, berry, lemonade. It's available in a pre-mixed powder. My personal preference is little effervescent tablets. You can simply drop in a bottle of water or a glass of water, and you're done. You got it, and you are rehydrated. And compared to sports drinks, Hydrolite delivers up to 4 times the electrolytes with 75% less sugar. I know. Don't buy into the hype of the brands. Use Hydrolite. It's a better product. I'm telling you, I had intended to invent it. They got there first, so I'm all behind them. Hydrolite solutions are appropriate for all ages, and each bottle or package includes easy-to-follow dosing instructions. Order Hydrolite today, hydrolite.com/drdrew. That is hydrolite.com/drdrew. And for a limited time, our listeners can save 30% on Hydrolite. We actually buy in bulk in our family, so we're going to click through. Believe me, just click the banner on my site and use the code DrDrew18. That is DrDrew18.
Remember, you can find all these podcasts at drdrew.com. The Dr. Drew podcast, the This Life podcast, and the Adam and Drew podcast, which is available 5 days a week. Find them all on iTunes and rate us 5 stars. Subscribe and get it first. And if you're really happy, click on the Amazon banner at drdrew.com to help support the show. We'll thank you for it. If you join the email list via drdrew.com/contact, we'll send you a weekly infusion newsletter with Dr. Drew's news. We're so grateful when you get in touch. We read all your emails and we'll bring you the subject matter you want to hear about.
You live.